Your ass better call somebody.
When you pull back the curtain, look under the hood.
You gotta give it that fuck good. Spent all that night here.
I'm like, I'm good. Like, I'm out.
I just came for the boobies.
Hey, what's poppin', everybody?
You're Mr. Feel Good. I'm Mr. Shit on Everyone's Hopes and Dreams.
I want to thank me for believing in me.
Often imitated, never replicated.
It's the balance of life, my friend.
I'd like to take this time to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Don't fuck this up. Count on you.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back into the 40 Chess Dynasty Football Podcast. We made it 2 weeks in a row. We're back in the full swing of things. Last week, we got to enjoy our Biggest Losers edition. Pretty fitting at the end of a long, grueling fantasy season. We always get the losers out, but today, happy. What were our winners? What were our predictions we got right? What were our player takes that didn't shit the bed? But as always, I'm joined by my good friend, my buddy, Mr. Matty Kiwoo. What's up, Matty? How you doing tonight, bud?
What is going on, brother? You know, we took it on the chin last week. We sat here and we took our L's. You know, we sat here, we took our lumps. We were honest with the fine people tuning into the 40 Chess Dynasty Podcast. But today, we are victory lapping on these bitches. We are coming out swanging, defending ourselves on some good preseason takes, good players that, you know, maybe we hit a little bit on.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And let me start off by saying, as far as rookies went this year, I feel like I did a pretty goddamn good bang-up fucking job. And just so people have full transparency on where a lot of that comes from, it wasn't just fucking luck. It wasn't just my charming, boyish good looks. It was the Discord, Matty. We had film sessions. We broke down all these rookies, all of us getting together every Thursday night, which I don't remember if it was Thursdays or Fridays last year, but it was one of those days. We're doing it Thursday nights this year, so every Thursday night in the Discord. If you're part of the Patreon, patreon.com/South Harmon, get your ass into a film session. And first time ever, man, Redwood's out here doing big things, screen grabbing, screen recording the whole thing, too. So if you miss it live, you can catch it on the rebound. But it was imperative, man. We have a good time sitting there chopping it up. Last year, looking at this rookie class and looking through all the quarterbacks that we had and all the wide receivers and trying to find the gems of the class. And Maddie, my first victory lap. No, it's not Jaden Daniels specifically, but don't worry, I will get to that. My first victory lap was after doing film sessions and after the NFL draft. I was under the impression, and I was very, very vocal about it, that this was the best rookie class we have ever seen in Dynasty football. Now, maybe that's not true if you were playing in the 90s. Off a newspaper, if there was dynasty leagues back then, which, you know, by all accounts from people I've interviewed on the South Harmon Spotlight, some of the OGs in the game, they were doing their thing back in the day. It just wasn't as mainstream as it is now. It was an absolutely fucking stacked rookie class. For some of you who only play in one QB leagues, my apologies. I forget those leagues exist sometimes. But if you were in any kind of normal Superflex league, it was fucking loaded, man. Six quarterbacks went in the first round. Receivers out the ass. The only thing that left a little bit to be desired was the running backs. But luckily, we found some gems in the later rounds. We found some third round, fourth round picks that hit, had moments, and stepped up big time. The headliners of the running back class did almost absolutely fucking nothing. We didn't see Jonathan Brooks. Trey Benson was kind of meh. And Blake Corum could never unseat Kyron Williams, which I guess that should have been on my loser's edition because I predicted it, but it was wrong. It wasn't even fucking close. It never even happened. But the totality of the rookie class with those six quarterbacks headlining it, six first-round fucking quarterbacks, and every one of them except for J.J. McCarthy, fucking shined. Every one of them had dynamic, absolute awesome moments, and even J.J. McCarthy, sitting here now, thanks to Sam Darnold being a fucking terrible quarterback, which we all knew about, J.J. McCarthy's dynasty value is now on the rise, because you're like, well, if shitty-ass Sam Darnold could do this, imagine what J.J. McCarthy could do. But, Maddie, that's my my biggest winner right now. That's what I'm going to start it off with, is how fucking right I was about this being the best rookie class we have ever seen, and I think it lived up to every bit, if not more, than what we thought.
You know, you touched upon two things that you got right. Obviously the rookie class, but I also want to talk about the film sessions, because this year the screen grabs have been fantastic. I have not been able to get in there live, but I have gone back and watched both Ash and Ginty and my man Tet, wide receiver from Arizona, these last 2 weeks. And it's truly unique because it's the full community. I mean, you get 10 or more guys giving their 2 cents and kind of, you know, as much as you might watch film and much as you dive into the numbers, getting a fresh look from people you respect, people that you like to just shoot the shit with, people that know ball, hashtag no ball. South Harmon knows ball. So, yeah, the film sessions, I highly, highly recommend that. If you're not part of the Discord, join it now. Get part of the Patreon, patreon.com/South Harmon. Get into that. I'm going to dive into my first here. My first hit is a rookie, too. We'll keep it. We'll keep on the vibe because you're right. This rookie class was dynamic. It was absolutely ridiculous. And I think some of the new dynasty gamers in the space are going to have a rude awakening when they just expect. You know, all rookies hit, right, Mike? All of them hit.
All of them.
I mean, you know, I can get every one of them. Fourth, I can do it. But that's not what we're here. We're here to celebrate some hits. And my biggest rookie hit was Malik Nabers. Malik, I was all about Malik. I was taking Malik over Marvin Harrison every which way that I could, whether it be in a startup dynasty, whether it be in a seasonal draft, whether it be in a rookie draft. I was all over Malik Nabers coming into 2024. Draft capital, the tape spoke for itself. The numbers were absurd. And then this year, wide receiver 7, 26 overall player, wins over replacement. Super valuable player out the gate. He was the 4th most valuable rookie, including quarterbacks. So behind BTJ, we talked about him last week. Jaden Daniels, we going to talk about him shortly on this episode. And then, of course, Brock Bowers. He was 4th right after that. But he was also wide receiver 8 in fantasy. So he produced on the field. I would say that the doubt surrounding Malik Nabers going into the season was, you know, obviously people thought he was talented. People thought he was, you know, the draft capital spoke for itself. But the situation was bad. The Giants' offense was bleak. People don't believe in Brian Daboll. Daniel Jones sucks. But the rebuttal to that, Mike, was always a guy with this skill set was going to get targeted a metric shit ton. And through his faults, Brian Daboll does like to build offenses and loves to hyper-target receivers who separate. And, well, I mean, Malik Nabers was not a stranger to separation when you watch him on film, watch those games in college. And then he comes out and balls out. 170 targets in his rookie year. He only played 15 games. I know that's most of the games. Still leaves some on the table. That's 11.3 targets per game, folks. Double-digit targets per game. And if he's gonna see double-digit targets, that was always the case for Malik Nabers. Often targeted, and it wasn't just short stuff. This wasn't Wandale Robinson who had 170,000 targets for 90 total yards in the season. He was getting targeted deep too. 6th in the NFL in deep targets, 3rd in air yard share. So he was getting the ball deep. He was dynamic all over the place. And what I love most about Malik Nabers is even if you were a bit hesitant, if you were a little shy to pull the trigger on Malik, it ain't too late to jump into some Malik Nabers shares. I know it's going to cost, but there's room for him to still even reach a ceiling we have yet to see, despite him going for, you know, bonkers in his rookie season. Like I mentioned, only 15 games played, so he could have a full 17 games played. He had almost 900 unrealized air yards. That's one of the tops in the league. There's a lot of meat left on that bones, and any which way you dice it, I mean, the Giants have to upgrade at quarterback, right? I mean, you or I could lace it up, and, you know, if we could keep this progress we have going on in the gym, maybe we're an upgrade. I mean, the bar is set so low in New York for a QB to come in and kind of be the tide that raises all the boats. And if just a couple of those things happen, one of those things happen, 1,700, we could see that Justin Jefferson, CD Lamb trajectory into super, super, super stardom. So Malik Nabers was a hit for me. I was on since jump. I'm glad that I was, because he has absolutely put down a rookie season that's worth to, you know, will always be remembered.
There's a couple things with Malik Nabers that I like too, that you pointed out. I mean, obviously you're going to look at 170 targets and a 35% target share. And for most of us normal people, we're going to say that's probably going to take a step back, right? Mm-hmm. Like it almost has to. If it fucking continues, holy Jesus, like a cheat code, yeah. Like good. Yeah. I would just tell people, just be cautious and don't draft just based on that. But there are a few things about him that still have room for improvement. He wasn't the greatest in contested catch situations, which he had a lot of opportunities because quarterback play was so shit. His yards after the catch wasn't anything to go like, oh my God, especially with that many targets and that many receptions. His overall counting stats as far as yards after the catch doesn't really jump out to you like you should. And that's one thing, if you watch the film on him back in college, that I think we both see that he can definitely do. He's got that like Jamar Chase like build where it's like,
oh yeah,
get this dude in the open field and it's fucking nasty. It's rough for people. So here's the thing. Even if he takes a little bit of step back, you know, on the target share, Matty, if he makes up for it at all with a little bit more after the catch and a little bit more efficiency and a little bit better down the field on contested catch situations with a little bit better quarterback play, mm-hmm. wide receiver one overall fucking potential. Easily. Even if they were to go out and add some big name, you know, I'm a big T. Higgins fan, say hypothetically they added T. Higgins in free agency. I mean, it's going to hurt his target share, and T. Higgins is a very good receiver in his own right. But if the efficiency takes a jump and takes place of a little bit of the volume loss that you get, holy Santa Claus shit. Holy Santa Claus shit. So room to improve yet for Malik Nabers, even though it was an outstanding season. The one thing that stood out to me, his expected fantasy points per game is 24.
Unreal.
24. Unreal. That's like elite quarterback numbers this fucking dude was putting up. But right now, Keep Trade Cut's got him at wide receiver 3. No problems there if you still got Chase or Jefferson over him, either one. Or if you got Malik Nabers number 1, I really don't give a shit. I think it's a pretty good tier to be in. I was slightly wrong on Malik Nabers. I thought he was very good. Adam and I were pretty excited about him. Adam a little bit more excited than I was heading into the season. I was a Marvin Harrison wide receiver 1 guy. Didn't work out that way. But Malik Nabers, I still got plenty of them on my team. So not mad. Not mad at all not in mad. My portfolio. All right, then. I've been around the bush long enough, Matty. Long enough. Let everybody else have their moments.
Let's get into it.
Jaden motherfucking Daniels. Biggest hit for me this entire season. Might be the biggest hit for me in my entire dynasty fantasy football career. Sure as hell is in my content career. There were people trying to fight me when I said I'm taking Jaden Daniels 101 overall. No fucking question about it. Mm-hmm. You're crazy. Caleb's awesome. Marv's great. Malik Nabers, Brock, whatever the fuck you wanted to say. The answer was always Jaden Daniels, and here we are at the end of the year, and it is still Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels actually has a real good case to be the number one player taking in startups this offseason, and it will happen quite a bit, especially if I don't want to see it. I don't want to fucking see it. I'm rocking the Eagles gear for a fucking reason, Matty. But if this rookie takes the fucking Washington Commanders, the Manders, to the motherfucking Super Bowl, I don't even care if he wins it in his rookie year. He has completely changed this entire franchise fortune. I thought it was going to be a very good RG3-like season. That was the one I comped to him. It was better than that. It was better than that. Which, maybe RG3 has this kind of season too if the Shanahans don't fucking trot him out there on one fucking leg and basically ruin his fucking career. Mm-hmm. But it could have been that. Jaden Daniels really stood out to me. One, on the film sessions we had, this guy could throw the ball deep. He could throw it intermediate. He was accurate, and he was extremely athletic in the mold of Lamar Jackson. Maybe not quite Lamar Jackson, but pretty goddamn close. One of the most athletic quarterbacks entering the league as soon as he got there day one, and the ability to throw, the leadership qualities, his poise, his moxie. He brought everything to the fucking table, even though people wanted to knock him because he's an older rookie and how it ended at Arizona State. Fuck all that noise. Caleb Williams was never the chosen one. It was Jaden Daniels all the way, Maddie, and we reaped all the benefits if you took Jaden Daniels. The only thing I regret is I wish I would have taken more. I wish I would have taken more. There towards the end of the rookie draft cycle, I was like, I've taken Jaden Daniels 101 every fucking chance I get. Or if somebody takes somebody else 101 and I had the 102, I take Jaden Daniels. I kind of talked myself out of it with the last couple of rookie drafts, and I was like, eh, let's diversify just a little bit. Let's take a little Caleb, you know, maybe try to get a Marv. Now, fuck that. I should have just taken all the Jaden Daniels. But the one that really stood out to me was this offseason. Shout out to my man, Dynasty Barry. Helped put together, and I shouldn't say helped put together. It was just my idea, but he put this whole fucking thing together. He did the spreadsheets, pulled all the data for me. Where elite quarterback seasons come from in fantasy football. And as far as Warp was concerned, those elite seasons almost always come from running quarterbacks. So, not that Caleb Williams is not mobile. He just was not mobile on the level of Jaden Daniels. So that's where the love started, man. As soon as DB put that out, we put out the content about it. And J-Day, number one all day. It was absolutely a historic rookie season for this man. And I think things are only going to get better. Only going to get brighter. If they do end up retaining Cliff Kingsbury, which it sounded like might be a real possibility. He seems pretty happy and content where he's at. And they go out and they upgrade the offensive line just a little bit more. They get him a few more weapons. They do need a running back. Austin Eckler has been fine. Brian Robinson, we talked about last week. A little bit disappointing. And please, for the love of God, Diami Brown has been a real nice, like, oh, he's not complete shit. But get him another wide receiver or three. Right, get him some more fucking weapons, which I think they can do this offseason. If he takes another step forward, we are talking about a 101 startup pick for the next 5-6 years, whatever it's going to be. Jaden Daniels is him, Maddie. So, yeah, there's my soliloquy. 5 minutes of me just glowing about Jaden Daniels and how right I was on him. And fuck every one of you who doubted me on J-Day.
I could have listened to 5 more. Hell, I could have listened to 10 more. This guy deserves every single minute of praise. And you and I talked about this as a concept last year. I believe it was on an AMA. How we shouldn't be scared of these older quarterbacks. You know, there's always this sense of young breakout, young breakout, young breakout. You and I talked about it philosophically, how I think the dynamic now kind of needs to be flipped on its head for quarterbacks. We want the poise. We, you know, that pocket piece that Dan Orlovsky talks about that Jaden Daniels showed so well, that comes with the reps. Bo Nix finding the right spot, landing himself in the top half of the first round, you know, that he was able to do that with reps, with experience, with starts, you know, a lot of experience under the belt. And I think Jaden Daniels is another case of that with having the transfer going to two different big, you know, big organizations, big mm-hmm. college teams. So that's big for these quarterbacks going forward. And Jaden Daniels is kind of potentially be part of that pioneer class. So we'll see what Penix does. He's that other older prospect in that last year class. But don't be afraid of it. Not to be afraid of. J-Day was the pick. And I didn't get him right. I was just an early believer in your good gospel, Brother Mike, on Jaden Daniels. So I was very excited. Now the people need to know. Can you even look at that awesome white Manders jersey, number 5, Jaden Daniels? Can you even look at it right now, Mike?
Not for this week.
You can't right now, right?
Not for this week.
No.
I wish him success. It's one of those things. I'm going to root for this kid for for here to eternity. Even in this game, coming up, I hope he has a good game. I still hope he loses. I still hope he takes that L at the end of the day. You know, if he wants to throw for like 450 and five, and they're like, man, he almost had him. The Eagles just squeak one out. Completely fine by me, boss. That's best case scenario. That's a win-win for me. The downside is if he throws for 450 and five touchdowns and completely blows the doors off my fucking Eagles.
Puts another 50 rack up on an opponent. But he could be the Patrick Mahomes to your Jared Goff in the battle at the Coliseum all those years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it was 54, was it 55, 53 or whatever, and they everywhere bananas. But I'm actually going to piggyback off that win, that success, that good call, that hit. And I'm going to pick his teammate, Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin was a player that I was grabbing everywhere that I could. I was not afraid to use that 2024 second that he was going for in the offseason, so I added him where I could there. I also was not afraid of the top 50-ish pick in seasonal drafts. So I got a lot of Terry Mack as my wide receiver too. And then this year, I mean, it was a great year to have watched Scary Terry and watched it unfold. He was wide receiver 6, a top 25 overall player in WARP, wide receiver 4 in fantasy football. I mean, it was truly the ultimate positive regression season. We've seen this man ball out year after year after year with the most dog shit quarterbacks you could ever think of. And holy shit, did it bounce back in a massive way. 15 receiving touchdowns. And I know that's not repeatable. And I know we don't chase touchdowns here at South Harmon, but I need to bring that up. 15 touchdowns. He had 25 total touchdowns his first 5 years in the league. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's a little ridiculous, right? Yeah. It's a little ridiculous. It's just like gonna meet his career fucking, yeah.
He hit 15 this year, but that is just, you know, that's why we speak the good word of J-Day. In the rest of his stat lines, truthfully, I mean, it was a spike in catches, so in PPR formats, that was fantastic. But when you look year to year, targets, 130, he kind of is right, he's always above 120. Mm-hmm. 1,100, you know, the receiving yards is kind of in line with what he's done over his career. It was just this year he's able to find pay dirt, and that is because he had a quarterback that could find him and help him score. I mean, watching the games, how many times did Terry Mack just come through in the fucking clutch?
Yes.
Him and J-Day, that connection was fantastic. Every broken play in the red zone that felt like ended up being a touchdown, it felt like it was always Terry McLaurin making a catch, some acrobatic, wild-ass play.
Am I not mistaken, too? Didn't he have a game where he only had 2 catches, but it was 2 touchdowns?
2 catches, 2 touchdowns. And I don't even think the yardage was there. I think it was like 15 yards. It was just like 2 touchdowns close to the goal to go, and it was enough to make your day. That was a reason why I just thought the season was so special.
Against the Giants. 3 targets, 2 catches, 2 touchdowns, 19 yards.
Yeah.
Wide receiver 2, 16 fantasy points on the week.
It was just like it didn't matter if it was targets. I mean, how many I rostered him? Like I said, he was a big hit for me this year, so I had him all over. There were a number of games. I'm looking at the clock on. There's 5 minutes left. He has 4 points. What the fuck is going on? I go ahead and take a shit. And I come out. Terry McLaurin has 26 fantasy points. How did this happen? And it could be touchdowns. It could be big plays. It could be 6 catches in the last 2 drives for 110 yards. The man was just able to do it in every which way. And I think the strategy behind McLaurin is this. You kind of have to make a decision as to when you're going to sell. And I'm not saying that I discount Terry McLaurin next year, but I think if you're a gambling man and you want to ride close to the sun and you want to wait out the NFL draft, there's a strong possibility that they don't draft somebody in the first 3 rounds, and you can just maybe flip them at even a bit of an increase. For me personally, I think now is the time to make a sale while he's still kind of balling with J-Day. And it's not necessarily that I don't like McLaurin. For me, it's more where he is. You know, you look at the market indicators like Keep Trade Cut. He's kind of in that range of Xavier Worthy, Jalen Waddle, Chris Olave, Jameson Williams, and it's not that I like those guys particularly more than McLaurin. It's that no matter how it unfolds, going into next year, he's going to cost you a second. So if you want to reinvest in McLaurin shares because you find yourself a contender, you feel confident in the decisions you made in the offseason, the cost isn't really going to go up. Where Worthy's price could go up from now until next kickoff. Same thing with Waddle, Olave, Jameson Williams. These are names that I think are young, electric, could see a value spike. So if I can just kind of dump at a high point with McLaurin and maybe even reinvest later, that's just kind of the strategy I'm taking. But I do believe in his ability to continue to ball out. But 15 touchdowns, I'm not going to chase that. I'll always sell off of a lot of touchdowns for a player like that, or really any player. So for me, big hit for me in 24. Let's see how it unravels in 25, because I do agree with you. They just cannot go into next year with Dynamy Brown and Noah Brown and Olamide Zaccheaus and Jameson Crowder. I couldn't believe Jameson Crowder laced up touchdowns. That's just probably how good J-Day is. But yeah, they got to bring in some more dynamic playmakers, because I think this weekend against the Eagles, that could be a difference maker in terms of Hurts to his weaponry versus J-Day to his.
The one thing that is kind of becoming apparent to me with Terry, and I don't want to make like the assumption this is how it's going to go, but isn't it kind of feeling like he's becoming Mike Evans 2.0?
Mike Evans, yep. 100. I mean, look at the track record speaks for itself.
Where it was always just like, okay, it's kind of nice or whatever. As we get here later into Mike Evans' career, I appreciate Mike Evans a fuck ton more, right? And it's one of those things, I get what you're saying too. I think if I got Terry and I'm any type of contender for next year, I'm probably not selling him. Like, I don't want to go, I mean, I can. I'm always going to play this game of like, what can I down tier to and like get more shit on top. But also it's just kind of nice knowing that I got a real solid wide receiver too, who may spike into wide receiver one at times. His consistency this year, even though it was, you know, touchdown base, and we talk about it, another little tool we got over at South Harmon, the spike weeks for best ball purposes. As far as above average weeks for a wide receiver, he's only beat out by one man on the season, had 10 weeks where he was above average. Terry's at 9, and that's just Ja'Marr Chase. Like, that's pretty fucking good company to be in. Now, the spikes weren't always there because, like you said, it was a lot of touchdowns. It wasn't ridiculous amounts of targets. You know, 133 feels like a lot, but it's not anything crazy. You're looking at like a 24% target share. And we're looking at adding some competition again next year. But here's the crazy thing. What if they do add some competition that's pretty good and it actually makes them better? Makes him more efficient. Makes him even more of a deep threat or a big play kind of guy. Maybe you get the spike weeks to go with the consistency, right? Maybe you get that. I think with Terry, I'm pretty comfortable just saying, like, listen, I'm going to ride whatever fucking high is on this Washington offense, and if there's two players I want to own on here, it's J-Day and Terry McLaurin. And, you know, kind of fuck everybody else at this point, but I want these two guys, pry them out of my cold, dead hands, because whatever you're going to give me ain't really what they're worth to me on my team. And listen, a lot of these teams I had, I got the stack too, Matty. I ain't breaking that fucking stack up for nothing. You guys can lick my balls.
let me ask you this. Let's say this in practice. You trade away Terry McLaurin, you get the return you want. You get the tear down, whatever the price is, you are happy with the return. And they take a receiver at the end of round 2.
Okay, or somewhere.
And so what do you think the value then looks like for McLaurin in May, June, July?
I think it will dip. I mean, we've seen dumbasses come out when, you know, who the fuck was that? Was it DJ Chark that signed with the Lions a couple years ago? And, like, people were ready to write Amon-Ra St. Brown off, like, DJ Chark was the one to fucking kill him. Like, we've seen these wild overreactions. So there is something to that, Matty, what you're saying. They draft a receiver or they sign somebody in free agency, there are going to be people out there who are going to be, you know, putting it on fucking Twitter and acting like they're the smartest fucking people in the entire world, that this absolutely nukes Terry McLaurin or whatever. And then, yeah, his value is going to take a dump. People are going to look at it and go, damn, he's almost 30. And, you know, it was all touchdowns or whatever you say. And, yeah, whatever you traded him away for, let's say right now, isn't what you're going to have to pay for him in, say, June or July, somewhere around there.
So, and I only bring all that up to say, maybe I'm a bit of a sicko. That's what I'm buying. I'm right back in. I'm with you that Terry McLaurin
gotcha.
At least gives you high volatility flex spike weeks at the worst next year, barring injury. So that's why my first step is always making the decision. Do you think they draft or bring in a free agent? If the answer is yes, I'm going to ship off and then try to buy later, try to take advantage of that panic sell. Because I'm with you. I do feel like there's still some left in the tank. And if you're not a sicko and you just want to stick to the production and not mess with it, not get a little too crazy, this guy's been a consummate pro, and he's kind of been a young old guy, has he? Even he was an older prospect, but he played, you know, he's been playing electric. He hasn't slowed a step, and he's kind of always been old.
Yeah, it's always felt like he's been old forever. I'm pretty sure he entered. He was like 24, 25 when he entered the league, too.
He was an older prospect coming in, and I bet you if you would ask like your casual fantasy gamers how old they think Terry McLaurin, I think that you'd get a lot of 26s. You know, I think he's 25, 26, right? It's like, but he's
about to be 30.
30, right? He's a grown-ass man.
About to be 30. All right, Matty, my next win. And this one started off for what could have been a massive L for me, but thank God I stuck to my process on this one. And my process is quarterbacks drafting the first round of the NFL draft fucking matter for fantasy. They do. Plain and simple. You can have all the player takes you want on them or not even think that they're fucking good. If they are drafted in the first round, they're going to retain value and they have the ability to gain massive amounts of value, which is why Bo Nix was a massive hit for me. We did film sessions, and universally, anyone who watched those film sessions can pretty much agree that we did not like him. We made fun of him. I think the line was used that this guy will fucking scramble just to throw a screen pass. whatever the fuck he wants to do, he wants to throw screens and bubbles and quick slants. This is all this guy really wants to do in checkdowns. He ends up getting drafted in the first round, which I didn't think was actually a real possibility, but it ended up happening. Sean Payton fell in love with him. The Broncos took him. And because right after the Denver Broncos made the choice to select Bo Nix in the first round, my process won out over my player take. My player take was Bo Nix is not a very good quarterback and is going to struggle at the NFL level. My process is, fuck all that. If a quarterback's drafted in the first round, Mike, you need to be in on him. And because people didn't like him, Maddie, I got this motherfucker anytime I wanted in rookie drafts. I would take him at the 108 because that's where I thought he should go. I would take him at the 9, the 10, the 11, the 12. Sometimes this son of a bitch would slip into the second round, would just let me do backflips. And because of that, I walked away with a nice, healthy amount of Bo Nix. 11 shares across my 44 Dynasty Leagues, Matty. 11 Bo Nix shares, pretty good ratio. The only other quarterback I have more of, Jaden Daniels. So this year, the way it played out with these two, I had a lot of teams in success, all because I stuck to my process on rookie quarterbacks, and thankfully, Bo Nix showed me a fuck ton. And I think the future is pretty bright for him. He's a lot more athletic than I ever gave him credit for. He runs the ball pretty well. And his poise and ability to deliver the ball down the field was something I don't think I saw on any of his film. I mean, he had moments maybe when he was back at Auburn. But everything that he did at Oregon was like a busted coverage or somebody running wide open, just layup throws. He was putting tight window fucking throws and dotting people up left and right in the NFL. It didn't start out the greatest early in the year, and man, did this guy come on fucking strong, and he did it with a cast of nobodies. You know, I've always been a Cortland Sutton fan, but he's kind of like Terry McLaurin, long in the tooth. We never really got to see it out of him. By far and away his best weapon. You and I did a show making fun of anybody who said trade a second for Devon Vele. That dude's fucking junk. Yep. Little Jordan Humphrey. Thankfully, Marvin Mims started to come on at the end of the season. So good for those people who stuck with him. Started to make some plays. Troy Franklin basically did shit all year. And the running back situation was absolutely fucking atrocious. Did him no favors. Mm-hmm. Bo Nix didn't give a fuck. He's like the honey badger. He don't give no fucks at all. He just went out there and balled his ass off. So the future's bright for him, especially if they can continue this and keep adding around Bo Nix. Tough division. Always going to be an arms race there between them, the Chiefs, and the Chargers. But Bo Nix, big surprise, man. Big hit for me too, man. I love having all this Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels on my team. But never would have happened if I didn't stick to my guns and say, you know, process over fucking player takes. Mike, don't fuck this one up. It's a first-round quarterback. Just take him. Just take him. And I did. Bo Nix, Maddie. How much Bo Nix you got on your squads?
Not as much as that. It's definitely, I don't have, you know, that 11 of 44. I have him in two of my 13 dynasty leagues. So I don't have a lot of shares. But that really wasn't so much of, I wasn't avoiding them. I just didn't have a lot of my dynasty teams are not pick rich, if you understand what I'm saying. So there wasn't a lot of opportunities at the pool to grab him, but I did get him at the end of round one for one of these teams. And then I actually did get him in the second round somewhere. And I've always thought this year, man, last year you might have gone into your rookie draft with the 103, the 108, and the 201. And you could have come away in Superflex with Malik, Bowers, and Nix. And holy shit. You could be down. Or maybe even Neighbors, BTJ. And I mean, this class was sick. And Nix really did it. And I think that of all of the rookie quarterbacks, I think for me, and I don't know if I'm speaking too out of line here, I think we could see the biggest improvement in terms of weaponry of all the rookies. Yeah, I do think the Commanders bring someone in, but I don't think they could bring someone in that impacts at the level that the Broncos could potentially. I mean, they're linked to Luther Burden, Emeka Egbuka, Tyler Warren in the first round. These are some of the names being floated in the mock drafts across the NFL world. Mm-hmm. If he gets himself a locked-on stud Mac Daddy pass catcher, it's only going to help elevate this guy's game to the next level, because I think a lot of the issues that he did face was when he was kind of in that fire drill looking for someone to make a big play, and he was able to help out his teammates more often, I think, than his teammates were able to help him. So a big improvement there would be sick. It'd be pretty sick for him.
The only one I'll throw out there of all the rookie quarterbacks, Drake May is in line for a massive fucking improvement of, I mean, they got $120 million in fucking cap space, right? Like, the Broncos are still paying Russ to not play for them. Like, they're still eating that one. So while the draft capital, is there for them, and I don't know what the Patriots decide to do with their early pick, you know, whatever the possibilities lie there. I do know they have a shit ton of cash laying around that they're going to have to spend, right? Like, I don't think people really realize, too, a lot of these teams, there's a floor that they have to hit, right? So they're going to have to go out and pay some fucking people to play for the Patriots next year. So the possibility is there to really fix that offensive line and get something better than Kayshawn Boutte and DeMario Douglas. I'm not calling him fucking Pop. He doesn't deserve Pop. And, you know, whatever the fuck Kendrick Bourne's got left in the tank. Like, Drake May could see a massive improvement too, but I do agree with you. Next up is probably... the Denver Broncos and Bo Nix, just because Jaleel McLaughlin, not it. Audra Gestave, not it. Javonte Williams, definitely not it. Whatever their tight ends are, I don't give a fuck who it is. Lucas Kroll was a thing.
Yeah, that was bad.
Not it. You know, Devon Vele, little Jordan Humphrey, not it. All right, so next up, at least Bo Nix had Cortland Sutton. That's more than Drake May had. More than Drizzy had.
You didn't even mention the guy that they traded out of the Ladd McConkey spot for, Jalen Polk. And I'm not saying that as you miss somebody. I'm just saying that as a remembrance of how bad of a pick that ended up being for the Patriots. Very low bar. We talked about if you and I continue to our gym fitness journey, we might could be able to be a QB upgrade in New York. We would most certainly be a slot receiver upgrade for the Patriots.
Yeah.
Power guys, you know, a couple of slot powers, you know,
yeah, I power, can box
power cops.
I don't know how I do taking hits over the middle. All right, you know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of a softy these days, made out of pudding.
So my next hit here for this conversation is a quick one, which is weird because kind of prepping for the show, looking at some of the hits, kind of going through my rosters, going through, kind of the win sheets that I put together in season, all that stuff. And it's funny, a lot of my QB takes, they were pretty terrible. The guys that I specifically talked about fading, targeting, didn't have a good track record there. But then when I look at the win sheets, the shit sheets for seasonal, when I look at my dynasty teams, how I approach those, my startups, how I approach those last year, I realized something. My takes were shit, but strategically, I was as sound as it fucking gets, and I deserve a little credit for that. I'm going to pat myself on the back for believing in the bona fide Konami Code Elite early quarterbacks. I didn't care that these guys had, strong ADPs. I was a little more strong. I was a little bit more aggressive towards these guys in ADP, whether it be Superflex or one QB seasonal. I made sure to come away a lot of my drafts with Jackson, Allen, Hurts, Kyler Murray, Jane Daniels. I was making sure that I came away with a bona fide Konami Code quarterback, and much of that credit has to be given to that video that you did over the summer, breaking all that down. You alluded to it earlier. All the guys I just mentioned, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray, Jane Daniels, all of them were QB1s according to Warp. They were all the top 12 most valuable quarterbacks in fantasy football. And that is in a year with extreme outliers from the pocket. We talked about this in a past show that the Bakers, the Burrows, these dudes who stood still like statues and were able to just find the touchdowns, make happen, become the pocket passer fantasy destroyers. Bit of an outlier, still didn't matter. It was about the Konami Code, and I am going to give myself credit there, and that is a hit for me, not steering away, not buying into the CJ Strouds, not waiting for the Dax, not waiting for the Brock Purdy's, not putting eggs in the Jordan Love basket. I said, nope, I don't care. Whichever one of these guys falls to me in that pocket of value, whether it be early startups being as early, the 101, obviously, it's easy peasy up there, but one QB, when we're talking about when do I dive in these seasonal drafts, I was able to come away with these quarterbacks, and I have a lot of Hurts, a lot of Jackson, and a lot of Josh Allen, and of course, Jaden Daniels, where I could sprinkle them in there. Big hit going Konami Code. Big, big hit.
Big dub there, man. Konami Code runs Superflex leagues, man, even in 6-point passing touchdown. You guys want the too long didn't read version? Don't matter what the fuck that is, man. Jesus Christ, don't even get me started if it's point per carry. Oh, my God. but 4-point, 6-point, doesn't fucking matter, man. You want the guys who can run the football. Yes, they do have lower floors. Yes, they can Anthony Richardson you. Yes, mm-hmm. They can be slightly disappointing like Kyler Murray, or they can Justin Fields you. But they can also Jaden Daniels, Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen. They can absolutely Jackson, Bo Nix, Drake May. They can absolutely fucking carry your teams at times. Maddie, the last one I got here, the biggest hit, was this process I had this offseason doing startup drafts, doing traditional snake drafts, which, listen, I don't want to sound crazy, okay? I don't want to sound too arrogant on this, but anymore, snake drafts are becoming pretty boring. They're pretty standard. You just sit there, and it's just like, as soon as this guy falls to me, I do it. And maybe it's just because I suck so bad at auction. I'll give a lot of auction advice. Proof is in the pudding. I can't help myself from fucking price enforcing quarterbacks and just leaving draft with like 5 quarterbacks and nothing else on my fucking team. That's my fault. That's me fucking up. But auctions are still big challenging for me. Snake drafts were getting kind of boring, but I did come up with a strategy this offseason as far as doing a startup where I waited on running backs. I would not take fucking running backs probably before round 9, round 10. And I did this almost universally across the board, and man, did it pay off big. And it paid off big considering the fact that most running backs stayed healthy this year. Like, we didn't get a lot of these surprises out of nowhere, but we still got enough. So while everybody else is sitting there and they're drafting Bijan, who was awesome, Breece Hall and Christian McCaffrey and Jahmyr Gibbs and Jonathan Taylor and Travis Etienne and Saquon Barkley, who was also awesome, and Achane and Kyren Williams and all these guys in the early rounds. I'm sitting there and I'm going quarterbacks, wide receivers, quarterbacks and wide receivers. I am not touching running backs. I'm not touching tight ends until much later. And it paid off. It paid off. Now, if you went a little bit early, you got guys like Derrick Henry in the sixth round, late sixth round in ADP. You got Joe Mixon in the seventh. That one turned out all right. Mr. Steady Alvin Kamara, eighth round pick by ADP. Also saw him and Derrick Henry a lot in the ninth, tenth round for whatever reasons. That happened a lot. Najee Harris was solid for you. David Montgomery was solid for you. There was some landmines. Zamir White was in that range. Tajay Spears was in that range. Woof. Not guys I was big high on. Aaron Jones paid off. Tony Pollard paid off. Brian Robinson paid off in the early part. James Conner paid off for you. Austin Eckler had moments. And then probably the biggest one, 12th round darling, Chase Brown. League fucking winning Chase Brown in the 12th round. Imagine waiting on running backs. We're seven fucking rounds after somebody takes, nine rounds after somebody takes Travis Etienne at the 310 and absolutely just fucking gaping him with a 12th round Chase Brown. Just absolutely annihilating him. Meanwhile, the rest of your team is fully loaded because you got quarterbacks, you got wide receivers all over the fucking place and good ones, and your running backs are sitting there and holding serve with people who just went out and just fucking spent on running backs, just spent early round picks on running backs. So, Maddie, I would say that running backs are probably going to get pushed up this offseason in startup drafts. Oh. And they're going to go a little bit higher than normal. I don't think it's going to be super crazy because people still love wide receivers and they still love to say dynasty and long-term play, that kind of thing. We'll see a value bump here. But I think doing this strategy again this year might be even more beneficial because what if we do get a regression back to the mean where we have all these running back injuries and all these jobs in limbo and this guy's down for the season and now this 14th round running back that you took is now the starter and putting up 20-point weeks. I think I'm going back to the well this year, Patty. I think on this one, when I do these startup drafts here in this offseason, I'm going right back to the not touching tight ends, not touching fucking running backs till the 10th round. Then we'll see what happens. So there's my my last dub, little draft strategy for you.
Solid dub. The real dub and all that you just said there was the process looking at 25 startups. But maybe this is a bold take. We're only, this is late part of January, still early, my friend. But I'm going to get real bold right now. I think that a couple of years from now, we look back on 25 as the great feasting for the zig when everyone's zagging type of dynasty gamers, when everyone's kind of going to just naturally gravitate towards these running backs in dynasty startups. Staking your ground is going to pay off in such a massive way. Massive way. I know Bucky Irving played fantastic. I know Tyrone Tracy came out of nowhere. I know every single running back played and stayed healthy. But there's about, and I am not the one who's saying this. This is Dane Brugler, one of the best in the NFL draft business, saying this. He believes he may end up having up to 30 running backs with draftable grades.
That's a lot.
Now, none of those, that's nowhere near going to be the amount of running backs drafted. But the fact that the talent pool is so saturated with quality NFL-capable running backs, just naturally, those guys that get taken in the 6th, 7th, they go undrafted, they're going to fall in your dynasty startup. And you can just go, you can just paint that, paint that, what is it, blue on sleeper, all those running backs, green, whatever color it is, just paint that shit running back in your mid to late rounds. And then I think you're going to benefit big time. I think it's going to be great. My last hit,
yes, sir,
was a somebody that I was trading for this time last year as much as I could. And then when free agency happened, was trading for it even more. And then after the NFL draft, I was trading for him even more. And it was Josh Jacobs. Are you on TikTok at all, Mike? Do you TikTok-y?
A little TikTok. I'm more of an Instagram. I've kind of transitioned now. But I'd still dabble in the TikTok.
So in TikTok, I admittedly, it's a guilty pleasure of mine. Do love the TikTokies. there was a trend going around. Does the name Gracie Abrams ring a bell?
Mm-mm. No,
Gracie Abrams, J.J. Abrams, famed producer. It's like apparently his daughter. She wrote this song called "That's So True," and there was this trend on TikTok where this song's very like da 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 da, and it just picks up. And there's this trend where you kind of look up at the camera and you run, acting like all slow motion, like a romantic comedy. That was me running to the board to make trades for Josh Jacobs, because when Jacob, I understand he's not fun to really dig into. He's not fast. Not
I shit on him all offseason, Maddie. I was on the other side of this.
He's not the most superb athlete, but I loved the situation being brought into Green Bay, and he produced. Running back 6, 16th overall player in WARP this past year. And in the year of the back, Jacobs still stood out. Over 1,400 rushing yards, 17 touchdowns, running back 5 in fantasy football. And of course, some of the hesitation for Jacobs wasn't just the player himself. It was the situation. Green Bay, historically, under Matt LaFleur, gravitated towards a 2 running back set. It was Jones, it was Dillon. It was always 2 running backs. But for me, it was always the contract was the rebuttal. The contract was the confidence that he could be the bell cow. And even though, you know, the drafting of Marshawn Lloyd suppressed the value a little bit, again, I was buying. I still feel like, given what we saw, if Lloyd was healthy, he kind of falls into that backup running back that would have spelled him at times, like Taylor did and Wilson did and all these guys that they would bring in for a cup of coffee in Green Bay. He'd been more effective, obviously, but I was still buying because I just felt like the contract was enough confidence that he was going to get the ball a shit ton. He was the bell cow. 4th in carries, 4th in red zone carries, 6th in weighted opportunities. He also added 39 catches for over 380 yards, which was the 13th highest amongst running backs. He was a producer in all facets of the game. And really just kind of sticking to those basic principles of usage is king for running backs. I kind of just looked at it two ways when evaluating him, and it's probably going to be my blanket evaluation for running backs, as simple as I can make. It comes down to two things. One, and this is a big, big shout out to Scott Connor, one of the best in the space, friend of South Harmon. If he's on a 53, he's for me. So that's where I'm going to start at running back, because there's no truer words. The dude's on a team, and he plays running back, you should be putting him on your dynasty team. And the second principle is the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid. If they produce, they get paid to produce. They're on a productive offense, they're going to produce. It's just sometimes it's that simple. So keep it simple, stupid. And the great Scott Connor said, if he's on a 53, he's for me. So those two principles kind of was what led me to believing in a guy like Josh Jacobs, a guy that, I'm not just going to sit here and tell you, he doesn't look like Bijan on the field. He doesn't look like Derrick Henry. He's a plotter, but he's been a successful one. And in this situation, I was able to pounce on it big time in trades last year in Dynasty, and I'm glad I did.
This is a weird thing, man. He signed there in free agency, and I got excited for him. I'm sure somebody can dig up the record or whatever. We might have did an AMA or a trade show or whatever. I was fucking over the moon with it. I was like, God damn, Josh Jacobs is going to feast here. Like, he's going to. And then they went out and they drafted Marshawn Lloyd. And then they went out and, like, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, like, oh, man, like, Marshawn Lloyd's really fucking good, too. He's more like that Aaron Jones, right? Like, we could have this split backfield thing. I got in my head about the contract to Jacobs, how they could actually get out of it for a reasonable price. And it wasn't as great as everybody seemed. And, like, LaFleur's never done this and he's never done that. And, you know, maybe Jacobs was just, you know, waiting for that payday, and now he's going to regress back to the mean. And then, Maddie, the first fucking 6 weeks happened, we barely got any Marshawn Lloyd because this guy has got the worst luck, apparently, in the history. I'm championing for him.
I got small calves.
A fucking guy can't stay healthy, and then even when he does get healthy, he has, what do you have, fucking appendicitis to, like, end his, like, God, what the fuck? Like, nothing ever worked out for Marshawn Lloyd. But in the first 6 weeks, man, Jacobs was just kind of mid. Like, and Emmanuel Wilson's out here getting a shit ton of work, and I'm like, oh, this is like the worst nightmare. This is exactly what I was fucking telling you about. Imagine when Marshawn Lloyd's healthy. He's going to get like half of this work because Emmanuel Wilson sucked. It was right after that, though, about week seven, Josh Jacobs and Matt LaFleur and the Green Bay Packers made me look like a fucking asshole, and he just ran away with, yeah, we're just going to give him 20-plus fucking carries, right? Yep. And he just starts rattling off monster game after monster game and being that guy. Maddie, let me ask you, though, as the Jacobs truther and me being the guy on the other side, looking ahead to 2025 with Jacobs, Marshawn Lloyd maybe will be healthy, maybe he won't be healthy, maybe they do something in the draft or whatever. What do you think of with Josh Jacobs? Like, where is your comfort level at? Like, if you're holding Jacobs right now, are you looking to deal him? Are you looking to just fuck it? We'll run it back. Go one more time. He's got one more in him at least.
I'm kind of using the Terry McLaurin core. The kind of the same approach where I'm looking to sell now. I think I can sell it at a bit of a premium, and I do believe I could buy back into Josh Jacobs at a price I'm comfortable with if I need to, if I want to. But I think right now I am selling at an inflated price. These trades are tough to pull off, but I have seen it done. If you can take your Josh Jacobs and put a secondary piece that makes sense for the guy in your league and get Chase Brown in a second balance piece, that's something I'm looking to do. I love Chase Brown. I think now's the time to get Chase Brown. You talked about Chase Brown. Chase Brown was awesome. But yeah, I kind of the same thing with McLaurin. I think now is a chance to sell a player, a bit of an age, advanced age in fantasy for premium. So I got to look to do so. And the factors that, you know, suppressed his value are still apparent. So I think that once people start getting a whiff of Marshawn Lloyd again, or if they re-sign AJ Dillon, or if they draft somebody in the fifth or sixth round, there are these situations where I think that that value can be suppressed again. And I want to get ahead of that. So I am looking to probably shop him right now.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, I think that's probably where I'm at on him on the ones I do have left since I fucked this up so bad. It got rid of so many. Like I didn't keep it simple, stupid. I made it too fucking complicated, but that's a loss episode. This is nothing but wins here. But
wins, baby. The vibes are high.
Yep. Yeah, maybe sell now. I mean, he's RB10 on Keep Trade Cut. So I mean there's a lot of options to go to. You can get to a Chuba, Amani, Tyrone Tracy, Joe Mixon, Pacheco, etc. Like somebody that you feel good about having a job next year and being pretty solid, get your significant plus on, wait and see what happens in the offseason, kind of get a better feel for it, and maybe you get to buy it a little bit of a discount. You can buy back in. So, yeah, I don't think that's the worst play at all. That seems pretty heady. That's why we got you on here. The 4D move.
That's 4D. That's what it's all about, baby. 4D chess all day, every day.
There it is. There's our wins. Maddie, I think next week we start diving in the 2025 class, huh? I think the people deserve it. Let's start talking about it. We got all the declares should be out of the way, right? Mm-hmm. I think they got a few days after the national championship, so we'll have that all settled. We'll know who's in the class and who's not going to be in the class. But we start diving in for the people and look ahead to the 2025 rookie draft. Kind of sucks. College football season's over. Congratulations, the Ohio State Buckeyes. We just happen to be in a Discord with a shit ton of Ohio State Buckeye fans. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how this fucking happened. Apparently, South Harmon is an Ohio State school. But congratulations to them. And fucking Will Howard's a national champion, Maddie. Let that one sink in for a little
bit. Listen, I was higher on Will Howard coming into the season, I think, than a lot of people was.
Well, I will say this. For the longest time, you look like an asshole, and now I look like the asshole as the Will Howard hater because the fucking man balled out in the playoffs. He really did. He really fucking took it to him in the playoffs. So congratulations, Ohio State, Will Howard, for being national champions. Good news for us. We get to watch Jeremiah Smith for another 2 years, all right? Knock on wood. Nothing bad happened to this man because he's amazing. I put it on my Instagram story. Shout out Skeletor in the Discord. He put it in the Discord. I stole it, put it on Instagram, pawned it off as my own. But he had that picture, that cartoon, where that guy's got the picture posted up on, like, the locker. It says, like, stun on these hoes.
Dexter's Laboratory,
Laboratory, So we get to watch Jeremiah Smith. Last question I got for you before we bounce out of here, Maddie. the fuck is the song outro tonight? The most important thing. What do you got in the bag for me tonight? Could be anything. Could be something we talked about, gut feel, or just whatever you're vibing with right now. Let's put that fucker up there.
Let's go with the Gracie Abrams. Let's go with the TikTok song.
Gracie Abrams. I'll see if I can find it.
Oh, you'll be able to find it.
You guys will
Gracie
know.
Abrams, that's so true. Let's go with Gracie a little TikTok song.
That, all right, fuck it. I'm going Gracie Abrams. That's so true. All right, fuck it. Maddie, you got anything else for the people before we bounce out of here?
No, just make sure that you're tapping in. I mean, this seems like the fantasy offseason, but it's truthfully the biggest, most busiest, most fun part of the year for Dynasty. So make sure you're rocking with us at South Harmon. Make sure you're subscribing and listening to this podcast, all the podcasts coming out in the South Harmon Network, YouTube, all that good stuff. And then, of course, don't forget to head over to southharmonff.com.
All right, everybody. We appreciate you tapping in. If you could do us a big favor, like the podcast, subscribe to it, and if you could drop us a review, that would be great. Helps out the channel so much. We appreciate everybody, and we'll see you back here same time, same place next week for 2025 Rookie Talk. That's it. I'm outside. Looking in the big blue eyes. Did it just to hurt me and make me cry? Smiling through it all, yeah, that's my life. You're in. I should go and warn her. Ooh, bet you think that she is so cool. Kicking back on your couch, making eyes from across the room. Wait, I think I've been there too. What you do to get you off? Taking down her hair like, oh my god. Taking off your shirt, I did that once. Or twice on. I know, fuck off. But I think I like her, she's so fun. Wait, I think I hate her, I'm not that evolved. I'm sorry, she's missing it. Sad, sad boy. Not my business, but I had to warn ya.